Hello, you are listening to CKMS News on CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario, radio waterloo.ca on the web. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access recordings of this show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website. I am your host, Trish Holmes, and if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, my username is at Mr. Darnley. At the recent Waterloo Regional Council meeting on August 11th, an emergency shelter planning update was presented by region staff, followed by five short presentations. Shelters in the region have long been under immense pressure due to increasing numbers of people homeless and unsheltered. Before the pandemic, there were 244 spaces in six region-funded shelters. Once the pandemic struck and the need for an isolation shelter arose, the Radisson Hotel opened its doors, supported by the House of Friendship. This new facility provided 96 spaces and access to on-site primary care and supports. Other temporary shelters included St. Mark's Church of 45 spaces and the A.R. Kaufman YMCA at 60 spaces. All three temporary shelters will be closed by the end of September. Chris McAvoy, the region's manager of housing policy and homelessness prevention, outlined the new capacity challenges due to the pandemic and pitched a plan for approval. Data was presented that showed shelter capacity is regularly at and over 120%. The mean of the average monthly number of extra people each night from January to May of this year was 46. A traditional shelter model provides a mattress to sleep on and a warm meal. People check in at dinner time and must check out by 8 or 9 in the morning. An alternative model, the one which has been employed during the pandemic at the Radisson, is a 24-hour facility where the men have access to around-the-clock supports and are not forced to leave during the day. According to an August 6 article in The Record, since the shift to the Radisson and this new shelter model, at least 18 men have been able to find housing. That same article details how allowing men to stay at the shelter 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, has led to fewer overdoses and problems generally. Incident reports have decreased by more than 40%. Overdose rates fell by half, even though the shelter capacity nearly doubled, and more people were seeking help for their problems. However, the partnership with the Radisson Hotel is expected to end in September. To counter this, staff proposed and council approved two dorm-style shelter spaces, each with a capacity of 80 and all at the cost of $7 million, half of which would be to cover the costs of staffing and the other half would be for renting the facilities for a year. Ideally, they want to open spaces in September to be prepared for the colder weather and the potential second wave of COVID-19. Staff were also directed to explore more options for alternative housing, including the alternative housing model with supports on surplus regional lands. Ryan Petpierre is the region's director of housing services, and he admitted that we're at a position where the shelter system as a whole has to go through significant changes. Regional Chair Karen Redmond said the region would also seek partnership opportunities and funding from sources other than the region. A significant topic of conversation was the challenge to come up with a precise number of unsheltered people, not only agreeing on a final number, but also agreeing on how to do it. Petpierre conceded here again, saying, "We know we have a significant amount of work to do on this front." So an obvious question here is how do we as a community facilitate this data collection, knowing that the more accurate and precise data we can compile, the better the chance to procure the appropriate number of spaces, resources and funding to do so. In making their decision, councillors heard from a number of housing advocates and good people all around, each of whom advocated for specific areas of need and all of whom stated that more spaces needed to be made available and more work needs to be done to get people into permanent housing. First up was Dr. Jeffrey Nelson, Professor Emeritus from Wilfrid Laurier Psychology, who advocated for the Housing First program.
Ultimately, what we need for people is permanent homes. And a good option for many is housing first. Housing First provides permanent housing and support. It's not needed for all homeless people. Only people with histories of long-term homelessness and other complex needs like mental illness or addictions. While these people constitute only 10% of the homeless population, They account for over 50% of shelter days. But what is Housing First? It's an approach that's based on the right to immediate placement in housing. Housing first, not treatment first. Housing with preconditions. Typically includes a rent subsidy so that individuals can access market housing of their choosing.
Dr. Nelson discussed transforming the system from placing the onus on temporary shelters to permanent housing. He applauded the initiatives like the tiny houses in the Lot 42, but reinforced the focus that needs to be on more permanent housing. He cited statistics and studies supporting rental assistance and Housing First programs. Among his recommendations to council were to support rent subsidies, maintain strong connections with landlords, capitalize on the anticipated influx of rentals on the market this autumn, help to prevent evictions, and increase investment in permanent housing to lessen the demand on the shelter system. Dr. Nelson reminds us that giving people options nurtures a stronger sense of control and responsibility.
That's why a key element of Housing First is choice. It's about having some control over your life. We also know that when people have more choice and they have more control over the housing they live in, their outcomes are better. They begin to have a sense of control they didn't have when they're on the streets where life is chaotic and unpredictable.
Up next was friend of the show, Martin Asling of Waterloo Region, Yes in My Backyard. Martin described the current situation where homeless and unsheltered people are struggling to find safe drinking water. He advised council that the more people living together in a dorm room, the less safe they will be, and to mind the number of unsheltered residents placed in a dorm room together. Martin also raised the issue of bylaws concerning homelessness.
So Joe Hermer, at the University of Waterloo, part of the COVID-19 Policing and Homelessness Initiative, what they call neo-vagrancy laws. And I'll just note briefly that Waterloo Region does have a bylaw that this project lists as a loitering bylaw. And so one of a kind of neo-vagrancy bylaw, and that's bylaw 13050 regionally owned properties, buildings, grounds, etc. And when the project talks about loitering bylaws, they say, "We have included all loitering prohibitions, not just because they are very subjective, but also because any homeless person surviving in public space would automatically become the target of such a bylaw."
Finally, Martin recommended to council not to criminalize people in need, don't push people out of the way, and to treat and give everyone dignity. Laura Hamilton, a volunteer at A Better 10 City, spoke next, and she argued for support for homeless people from a human rights perspective. She referenced international agreements and treaties that Canada is party to that compel us to provide support as if we actually stand behind our international commitments. Laura asked council to ensure all homeless residents were provided with housing options by November 15th of this year.
The clock is ticking and 2020 will soon come to an end and snow will fly in just a few short months. And so I'm asking you, our regional council, to invest in the resources necessary to ensure that all unsheltered residents of our region are in by November 15th, 2020, and that they are safe and have access to the resources and supports that every other resident of a region has. I know you are committed to housing first. Being unsheltered and living rough remains a crime. Being addicted remains stigmatized. Housing first is just that. Housing first is immediate access to housing, and we agree that housing is a human right, and we all know that human rights are not dependent on whether or not you are considered to be ready for them.
Laura pleaded with the council to embrace the housing first approach because it saves lives and enhances the safety and well-being of our community. Dignity comes from choice and control.
Continue to struggle with addictions and mental health challenges. How can we possibly expect people living rough or even precariously make positive changes in their lives without a home and access to supports? A recent City of Kitchener housing needs assessment indicates that 250 to 750 people are in need of supportive housing in the three cities. So your plans to immediately provide dormitory housing for 160 to 200 of those presently in the shelter system is a great place to start and a terrible place to stop.
Another friend of the show, Jeff Wilmer, also a volunteer at A Better 10 City, presented next, and Jeff agreed with and was encouraged by the dorm-style idea. His only concern was that the report underestimates the number of unsheltered people and that the need may be far greater than the region expects. He called on the region to increase the number of planned emergency spaces, with the caveat that not all solutions work for everyone and services may need a wide variety of options. He was buoyed by the interest in alternative housing, noting the fact that affordable housing investment reduces other costs. He provided an update of a Better Tent City, describing the facilities, the environment, the community, the success around fundraising, and the volunteer and material contributions from the community. He praised the lack of barriers, noting those who cannot find room at traditional shelters, such as couples and people who rely on their pets for companionship, are accommodated for at a Better Tent City. Jeff reminded the council that a Better Tent City is on safe ground currently only at the discretion of the property owner. He listed the things he'd do differently in setting up such a project next time, including having fewer people and smaller communities, integrating street outreach earlier, and integrating a social enterprise into the community. Jeff said a new shelter in Cambridge was going to be needed. He described how people come together to form encampments and reinforce that he doesn't want to be just collecting people. He wants to be helping people transform their lives.
The stability that was given to them by either by being able to tent indoors where they weren't trespassing or to have a cabin of their own gave them hope. And they were no longer in life of pain and despair and hopelessness. They had stability and hope. So that very, very quickly resulted in stability. And we were surprised and impressed at how quickly that change was made. Again, this is with no professional services, no counselors, that this is just people living as a community. Now they're given a space where they're not trespassing, but a place of their own.
Jumping to the final speaker, Alexandra Petrovich, the executive director of the Social Development Center. They're called to double the number of dorm room style spaces, enact a review of harm reduction and service restrictions, and to provide immediate and pragmatic direct supports to encampments. She also reinforced the importance of building trust and relationships and where government doesn't take over. This reflects Chair Redmond's comments about the need to seek new partnerships. The second to last speaker was Leslie Crompton, the director of the Social Development Center, a member of the Civic Hub, and a volunteer with a Better Tent City. Leslie is also a co-lead of the Unsheltered Campaign, and she has run free tax clinics for people on low income. She has raised awareness, advocated to municipal council, and coordinated basic need networks. Leslie talked about her experience and the importance of the ideas of agility, ability, flexibility, adaptability, and innovation, and how important these are when dealing with issues of homelessness. Discouraged by the low figures released by the region, Leslie says there is generally not enough spaces, and more specifically, not enough spaces for particular populations. She expressed support for the dorm approach and asked council to consider a number of points. She reminded the council that even according to the housing assessment, there are still up to 650 other unsheltered residents, so she expected at a minimum double or triple the existing capacity. Leslie also noted that the offer on hand doesn't do anything for people in encampments and the dorm approach doesn't take into account couples. Leslie also questioned how we can meet the variety of needs different people have rather than a one-size-fits-all approach. And she stated that the process of applying for housing needs to be simplified and less bureaucratic. She noted the high entrance barriers at shelters which force people to sleep rough, as evidenced by the fact that the shelter in Cambridge has spaces, but some people would rather camp than stay there. She expressed concern that the offer only accommodates men from the House of Friendship and Ray of Hope. She also noted the need for porta-potties and clean drinking water, thanking those responsible for the delivery of a porta-potty at the Victoria and Weber encampment. We know where encampments are, so why can't we provide these basic needs for people? The encampment of Victoria and Weber are about 10 people who are looking to find a Lot 42 style arrangement. They are being kicked out of where they are situated. They must be gone by August 24th, and the encampment is being dismantled August 22nd. Leslie also agreed to talk to us to further comment on her remarks at the meeting and about the meeting in general.
I was just wondering what you thought of the outcome of the city council meeting, as pertaining to the approval of the dorm facilities.
I am happy they have approved that. I think that it's still a huge cost. that only solves an existing situation. As I said at council, all that is doing is moving the individuals that are in the Radisson, in the Ray of Hope, to housing, which is awesome because we have been concerned about what they were going to do with these individuals, right? So the people have been in the Radisson for months now. Were they going to become unsheltered again? What was happening? That's great, but it does not provide anything for those in encampments currently. Right. Nor does it doesn't provide any winter options for those individuals, nor does it support them now, right? And so I was disappointed, very disappointed that that is all that the staff of the region put forward as options. I was encouraged, but still concerned, encouraged by the fact that council did ask them to go back and try and be nimble and come up with some more alternatives. The concern is that we are now at August 15th, I think. And by the time the region goes out and does their analysis, gets back to council, it's probably going to be at best the October meeting.
Take a time.
Which means there isn't going to be much in place by November 15th, which is when big snowstorm came last year. So I am concerned. And we've been asking the region, we've been asking the city to look at alternatives a long time. And they continue to shift this to the community to solve, to Lot 42, for example. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're now in a situation where the taxpayers, and I am a taxpayer, are doing the work of the region, of the city, the province. And you have to talk to all levels of government because we have a hierarchy of where the funding come from, who sets the rules, which just makes it even worse.
Given that Housing First was a major recommendation of the delegations, I asked Leslie to provide more information.
Housing First means strings attached. Right. It means you don't have to be clean. Don't have to, basically, we're going to house you, something that is appropriate for you, regardless. And then we will get to know you, we'll get support, that type of thing. And that's the challenge. The same thing on the street, they have this program called PATHS, which are supposed to help individuals on the street get access through Lutherwood and everything else. You got to sign up with Lutherwood. You have to do this acuity test, which I have to read. The region was trying to tell us about this acuity test, right? So it's trying to determine how able you are to manage things. And I understand you need to assess people, but they call it the full SPDAT and the VI SPDAT tool. And you have to go through this for the triage. It's a pre-screening tool. And like I'm just pulling up the document now. It's an 11-page document. That has to be done before you can even be considered.
Okay.
And sure, there's a lot of great things in it, and I'm looking at it now. The challenge is that even after doing this 11-page, because we have a housing problem and the housing crisis, you do this 11-page thing, you brave share, you bare your soul, that's the word I'm looking for, you bare your soul and all your private stuff, and then they say, you know what? We're going to put you on a waiting list. And so people aren't signing up for it. Lutherwood goes down to the St. John's Kitchen, at least, I think it's every day, but at least once a week, Monday through Friday. And they sit there and they will do this and will put you on the PATHS program. And guess what? All of our people in our particular encampment, as well as other people camping around St. John's Kitchen, are not signing up.
Sit the waiting list, yeah. Right? Put yourself through
so
that.
Again, yeah, and so again, when you have these things, again, it's too much bureaucracy. Housing can't have to do these things with Housing First. So if you are looking for housing in the region, the systems that you and the hoops that you have to jump through get access, whether you are homeless or becoming homeless, are significant.
I asked Leslie about the old style of shelters versus the new model approved by the city.
You know, emergency shelter in the form of the overnight ones, which they've always been, is supposed to be short term. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Radisson and what the city's proposal is 24/7 is a huge step forward. Because you're normally emergency shelters, or you get to go in at 8 p.m., leave at 8 a.m. Figure out the rest of your day, take all your belongings with you. So the new model, feasible, which the region has approved, is you're going to have shelter 24/7. You're going to have privacy, because either in a single or a shared room, belongings get to stay, you get to stay, and there's support on site for you need. And I agree with the support services, because individuals really do need the support services depending on where they are in their stage of life. So that is good. And that is important. So to take the encampment that we are talking about and put them in the Cambridge shelter, which is a traditional shelter, serves no purpose. As I said at council, you know, you highlight that there are, every night there's 20 beds in the Cambridge shelter available. Every night, emphasis on every night, you have 106 in the encampment by the river. So my question to the region is why? Why are these individuals staying in an encampment when there's beds in a shelter?
It's a good question. Why do you think that is?
Because the shelter does not, again, it's an overnight, like a privacy. There, as much as the shelter will tell you there's no theft reported to them. There's also all kinds of different abuses and such like that. And you're putting a lot of, in the encampments, they build for safety. So they get together and they put their tents and such together so that they are safe, as they can be on the street. There's still risks. They also have their belongings. So if you were to go to the factory encampment, it's just a bunch of tents that people sleep in. They have living areas. So I have literally gone in, and when I go to visit and talk to them, go in and we sit in their sitting area. They have living rooms, right? Do things, right? So all the shelter does is give them a place to have in their sitting areas. One gentleman is a mechanic. So he's got his tools. You can't take the tools to the shelter. When you go to the shelter, basically you bring a knapsack, and that's what you bring. Once again, they're being asked to throw away garbage, all the belongings they have collected that are important to them.
What would you do if you were in charge?
Oh, there's a loaded question. I would really start focusing on the alternatives we've talked about.
Right, like cabins.
I would get out there and start talking to all the different. So I've been involved in one encampment, listening to what their needs are.
Right.
I haven't been out to the other encampment. Their needs may be very, very different. Before even going out and talking to them, first thing I would be doing is making sure that there is at least one porta potty at every single encampment. Encampments are mapped out. We know where they are. We need porta potty, we need clean drinking water. Mm-hmm. We have been asking for that, not just for our encampment at factories, for all of them. Mm-hmm. It took 2 months to get clean drinking water at factories. Have a tap is coming out of the St. John's kitchen. They can access drinking water 24/7. Mm-hmm. Right? 'Cause they were trying to catch water and drink the water from the rain.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Took longer to get the porta potty. It's August now, and it wasn't until the beginning of August that we got the porta potty, right? Because the view was, well, during the day they can go to the St. John's kitchen, and at night they can walk over to the Charles Street Terminal.
From Victoria and Weber? That's not really appropriate, but I mean, it's a huge distance.
It's a huge distance. So surprise, surprise, you have neighbors like Ron's Lock and Tools, and you know, do feel for Ron. I mean, he does get angry sometimes. People are pooing on his property.
Of course.
They have nowhere else to go, right? And it's the same thing, and that's why we have people down drinking river water, because they don't have continuous clean sources of water. We realize that some of those encampments are not near buildings, have water. But, you know, we were proposing and we've actually gone and purchased pumps and things that you put on the tops of those big water bottles, the huge ones. And then we wanted to arrange for people to make sure that they get out and refill them. Ideally, you know, getting the encampments somewhere where they have access to water, washrooms, showers, food on a consistent basis.
And you're finding that a lot of encampments are lacking. Is that not a public health issue, especially during a global pandemic?
Well, I would have thought it was.
But the authorities aren't interested in helping with that, like the health authorities.
No, not at all. And interesting enough, when we asked for the porta potty, we did get. Region's first comment was, we have to go and ask public health about getting a porta potty for that location. My comment was, why would you have to ask public health to put a porta potty somewhere where people are currently using alleyways?
Absolutely.
So August 22nd, yeah, we'll be dismantling the encampment.
Okay, Victoria and Weaver.
So in a dignified, respectful manner. We have a 20-foot moving truck coming, being donated for us to use. We have campers coming to help them dismantle, pack, move wherever might be moving. And then should it be another encampment, which at this stage it's probably going to be, we will remantle them at that location.
So that's less than a week away and they don't know where they're going.
Because we're still trying to figure out even where we would put them. We're going to build another encampment. But what is important is the community is coming together to do this. So we are not going to dismantle and garbage and turn this into a negative situation. The individuals living there don't want that. That provides more trauma. And so we are going to help them do it in a way that saves their belongings, treats them the dignity of moving, just like moving your own house.
Mm-hmm.
And then the volunteers are supporting. The number of volunteers and people that are out there now going to encampments, dropping off food, dropping off clothing. Like, there are a lot of people, mainstream early region taxpayers, that are out there going to encampments and talking to these people, right? There's this one wonderful lady, Julie from 519 community, takes her kids. Kids are part of the process, right? So I think that's important to emphasize because it's not a fear factor. It is really looking at these people as human beings and treating them with dignity.
So what we've heard from both Leslie and regional council meeting is that the numbers of unsheltered people are likely to be hugely underestimated, that we may be approaching a second wave of the COVID crisis. We are definitely approaching winter, and shelters are ill-equipped. Essentially, it looks like we're headed for a perfect storm. The report overall from Regional Council is that we must give people options. We need a nuanced understanding of the needs of homeless people. A human rights approach to homelessness makes it clear what needs to be done. We need to examine our bylaws and ask if they discriminate or increase the risk of further vulnerability. We need more property on which we can build housing that will serve as a safe and supportive transition space in which people can find safe, permanent housing and transform their lives. This all needs to be done with the region collaborating with the homeless community, other community groups, and the private sector. These were among the points advocates made in amongst background of asking for more spaces for people and for employing the principles and practices of Housing First. On this episode of CKMS News, we reviewed the discussion about homelessness at the regional council meeting that occurred on August 11th. We talked more in depth with Leslie Crompton, and she can be contacted at the Unsheltered Campaign. Check out the archived version of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo. And you can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover. Thanks to Leslie for her time and energy, and thanks to you for listening. Have a great day.